The University of Missouri football team is in a state of distress after a group of over 30 black players announced that they will go on strike until University President Tim Wolf resigns. This statement was released via the group's Twitter account, Legion of Black Collegians. The group believes that Wolf has shown, quote, negligence towards marginalized students' experiences. There has been racial tension on campus since the beginning of the school year, most recently when a swastika was drawn on a bathroom wall in a dormitory. The players have found support from their coach, as well as the Missouri Athletic Department, which released a statement saying that the university supports the student-athletes' right to fight the issues on campus.
Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Well, we have an exciting show today, and we're going to get into some really amazing topics. So sit back, relax, get your drink of choice, and take a ride with the One Mic, One Voice show. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. Today's podcast is brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit their Facebook page. And I am Michael Eric Owens, along with my co-host,
DT.
We are back in Blacken Studio, and I tell
once
you
again,
what.
Once again.
Man, it is a pleasure to be here with our engineer, Richard, and things that, folks, I just want to put a plug in for Blacken Studios. I know some have already decided they wanted to do their podcast with him and with Richard, and I can hear I'm here to tell you this is a class act. If you want somebody that's going to handle everything for you,
don't say that, Mike. Don't
you
say
know, that. Don't no, say no. That. You need to come with the ideas and the format. But I mean, the professionalism and the way that he's going to guide you through this process. Listen, folks, you're not going to get it better done. At least not here in Oklahoma. I don't know where you're going to go else, but here you need to look them up on Facebook. DT. Are we in good hands?
We are in really good hands. You know, sometimes I think that maybe Richard treat us a little too good.
Man, like we taking advantage
we might
of
have
him
it too made it here. I don't know, but we definitely appreciate you, brother. That's for sure.
You know, and like anything, quality cost. And when you want to have something done right, you go to the experts to get it done. So I'm gonna say, folks, we building a network here at Blacken Studios with great content. And so keep your eyes out. You might have that idea that you want to launch something. This is the place for you to start with. Even if you just need advice, Richard's going to point you in the right direction. And so, brother, I am so excited to be back here with you.
Another day. Another day. Episode.
How's your day going?
Man, if I could even like kind of complain about something, I wouldn't have anything to complain about, man. I have those type of days, you know, because I can just sit back some time and just be thankful, man.
Yeah.
Just take it all in and be accepting of where I am and enjoy life, you know.
No doubt.
So I'm good. How are you? Yeah.
I'm good, man. I mean, I'm like you. If I complain about it, it wouldn't matter one bit. And so it's best to kind of focus on the positive and try to move forward. And as you heard, of course, and our listeners heard, you know, Missouri, man, and this thing that's going on at the university, and in our intro here, wow.
You know what, it really does my heart some good to see students stand up for themselves. Being on a college campus, you may seem or feel sometimes a little powerless because everything around you is controlled. Your tuition, your teacher, your, you know, administration, all of those things are not decided by you. And in those environments where you may be feeling some type of social pressure or some injustice, you know, some type of ill feelings, and you have a little say-so in what could really happen. But these students, man, have took it upon themselves to make their voice heard, to spread the movement across the campus, and to really dedicate, you know, their effort to something that is impacting, you know, millions of people.
And you're so right. The college campus, I mean, the college is supposed to represent this period of enlightening.
Right, it's where you grow up yourself.
You know,
right.
where you embrace people from all walks of life, not just locally, nationally, and internationally, where your preconceived notions are challenged, mm-hmm. and that you're in a learning environment where your mind should grow. And man, this just reminded me of, just some petty. I mean, is this higher education?
Yeah. Is this high school?
Exactly. I'm thinking, these are people that's going to go out in the world and make the decisions that matter tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And
man, that's heavy. Mike, you just said something crazy. Right. Because I don't think all the time we look at the kids that way, man. Yeah. It's like, I don't know, if we always give them that respect, that they are going to be the ones out there making the decisions. This is going to be their world in a little while. And we have to treat them that way. We have to give them the tools they need to perfect and to polish those skills and give them what they need to really grow. And like you said, help them mature and do the things that they're going to do in the future for everybody.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They are going to be in leadership positions at some time or another. And to be caught up in racism, this flies in the face of so many people say, well, this generation is coming along now. They don't see color. Man, are you kidding me? Every time I hear it, I think, what planet are these people living on, right? I mean, it is, as we've always said, the interchange between individuals in this world is so colored by implicit biases, preconceived notions, what people have been taught or not taught. And these are the people that are in our universities. I mean, Missouri is not the University of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Okay. Missouri is not, we can't look at this in isolation. I mean, this, to me, this is more the poster child. That's what's happening at our universities, historic universities.
Yeah.
I mean, this group called themselves the 1950s, this group. Is what they call themselves because of that's when blacks were first allowed to this university. I'm saying, this, even if you look at what has been going on, it has been years and years of marginalization of minority people, minority students. And you heard from the intro. I mean, folks being called niggas, okay? Mm-hmm. We say it for analytical purposes. Oh, the swastika up in a bathroom somewhere, okay?
Made out of feces.
Take
their time to put the
Man, come on.
On the wall, man.
Man, I'm like,
oh, my gosh.
I wonder, was it his own or something? He borrowed somebody else's. Man, can I get some of that from you? I don't know if that was, man, let me get some of that.
I was hoping it was Nutella or something like that. Like, they didn't get real feces. Like, they got.
It said feces.
The chocolate cream powder or something. I don't know, but.
The chocolate shake, the malt.
Yeah, right.
No,
but the lengths that people are willing to go to, man, just to do stupid, idiotic things like that, it's really shocking.
It is. And what does this say about the administration, about the faculty, about the staff?
What I wonder, though, that you say that? Were there people on the staff who advised these young men to stand up for themselves and to say, these are the steps you need to take to get some resolve?
I think it was, but what about them stepping up? Sometimes we say, well, that's happening to you. This is what you need to do. No, it's happening to us. It's, to me, black, white, doesn't matter. It affected all of those students, whether they were involved or not involved. It is the culture. It is the climate that exists on that university. And that's why that President Wolf was ultimately responsible. He met with that group. That group talked very openly with him, and he didn't, they said he didn't want to implement anything, man. He, I hear you, but go deal with it.
Did you get to read the statement he put out?
I didn't even want to read it.
It was pretty much in line with what you just said. He didn't really address anything, but just saying that he allowed the students to come in and talk to him, and that he heard their voices, and that he was concerned about the young man's health who had taken the
we're gonna get to that. Yes.
And that was pretty much it, man. Not that he was going to implement any action, any steps, any type of course of resolvement, just that he heard the issues, he heard what was wrong, and that's where he was.
You know, man, what do people think? I mean, do they think individuals just make this up? I mean, do they think that you feel, you know, you're just paranoid and you just feel marginalized and you're just imagining people calling you nigga and all this other? Do they actually think that you just make this stuff up? Well, like you want to live an existence like this?
Probably to people who it hadn't happened to may think so. You have to be able to go through it to even understand it or say you can call that a true thing, even though in plain sight it goes on all the time.
And whose responsibility is it to ensure that these things don't happen on the college campus?
That would be your president, correct?
He would be ultimately responsible. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't we all be responsible? I mean, if the brother man over here is saying, you know, white people this and honky that, this and other thing, shouldn't we be able to say, well, hold up, man.
Yeah.
Hold up, man. Nah. We're not going to go that way. You got some issues. Do you understand what I'm saying? Don't talk like that around me, okay?
But we have few characters like that, man, who are just willing to tell it like it is.
They just listen, right?
Yeah.
I'm not prejudiced, but, Dan over here, he going off, but no, I'm not prejudiced. But why don't you tell Dan where to take it? Mm-hmm. Say, hey, look, man, not in my presence. You're not going to do that. The first prejudiced black dude I met, man, I called him out, man. I'm like, really, bro, you prejudiced? I'm like, serious? He's like, no. I said, no, hold on, man. I cannot believe you prejudiced, man. I'm like, no, you got some issues. You know what I mean? I wanted him to know we don't see the world the same way. Let me just come clear with you. However you view it, whatever you do, I can't be you. But one thing I'm going to say, while you in my presence, don't bring that my way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I think if you do that, people will. They're not going to bring it. They'll move on.
Yeah.
Okay? Let them be prejudiced by themselves.
Yeah, they won't find themselves making those comments around you.
Oh, absolutely. They be making them in the mirror to themselves.
But like I say, more people who are willing to stand up and make that stance, and that's less people who have those type of interactions, or have people who come into their space and are freely sharing that energy with the rest of the people around them.
Why would you even want to have an associate? Man, I wouldn't even call him a friend. An associate that took that worldview. Why would you even want to bring that into your life, knowing that you know diversity, you know diverse people, you believe that all people are equal, you believe all the, why would you let somebody bring that into your space without checking it?
Maybe comfortability,
fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of what?
Maybe I have a hard time making friends. Maybe the only friends that accept me are the prejudiced ones. You know, maybe I can only make racist friends. Maybe all of my friends just so happen to hate black people and all other types of people of minority and diversity, you know.
But they my friends, though.
But they my friends.
Yeah, we cool. We go drinking, we eat.
They don't call me whitey. They don't call me.
They don't look at me like that, huh? Yeah, I mean, it's so what we're trying to say, it's the university president ultimately. But again,
individual responsibility.
It's individual responsibility, man. We can't shake that because somebody knew who put that SWAT sticker on that bathroom. Somebody knew that, okay? We are our brother and sister's keeper. That's the reality.
Because, like, even as a bystander, if you don't do anything, then you're just as guilty.
That's nasty.
If
I'm living in that dorm, that's nasty. Okay, I'm not going to even stand for that. You know what I mean? It's like, what are we animals? I mean, really. And to me, the cowardice-ness of you doing something like that, man, that's what kills me about this whole thing of, people being prejudiced. I mean, it's so covert. I mean, it's so in the back. You know, you're gonna say to your friend, but you don't say it to somebody's face. Or you driving away and you yell it, you know, niggas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you, you know, I told him. You know, it's that sort of thing. Like, man, it's just a coward thing to do. If you got an issue, be a man, be a woman. Stand up and articulate your issue, okay, in a way that I think can solve our differences and not increase the divide that we have. Personal responsibility. I will say that it's a failure in even the way we prepare our kids to go to school, DT.
You mean in reference to dealing with racism?
Oh, absolutely. How you even step on the campus and you racist? Okay, you didn't. I find it very hard to believe.
We go back to those learned practices, man. You have a family that grew up that way and passed down those ill practices to the people that come up under them. And so in that situation, you don't have a choice necessarily. Maybe when you get to college, you can then separate yourself and start to open up your mind to some different things.
Daddy,
but you've
prejudice.
Been already precursed with those
Mama
ideas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have to step on the campus as that person who been taught all that.
Yeah.
That
stay away from black people. Mm-hmm. All white people out to get you. If you step on campus, you paranoid, right? You know, you can't even speak to anybody that's of a different race because they're out to get you, right? Okay. The whole, well, I get that. I accept that. Okay. Say, okay. But then all of a sudden, the whole interchange among the humankind teaches you different. Okay. I speak to you. How you doing? Oh, wow. Guy spoke to me. Hey, cool. You know, he don't look like he want to knife me. You know what I mean? And we work together in a study group, and all of a sudden you find like, wow, that's no different than him and I and so forth. So sooner or later, all of those misconceptions should break down.
But you have to be open to it, though.
But don't you think we have these organizations that perpetuate it? University of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. SCC, I think is what it is. SCA or whatever it is. SAE, that's what it is. So they perpetuate it, you know? You get around a like kind. You get around
But to go back to that cowardice you talk about,
doing
it amongst themselves, but they never rally around a football team and do that.
Oh, no, you can't do that. You can't find that. You probably get slapped around the locker room a couple of times, you know.
Hit you with the helmet, the shoulder pads.
Man, and how much accolade should we give the football team?
Man, highest.
Wow.
Highest accolade.
Wow.
Because they've done something, man, that was risky in the sense that, I mean, and I say risky, but at the end of the day, those young men could go play football anywhere.
Yeah.
And to be on a campus they don't feel safe at, they don't feel respected at, it is their decision to go
on. I'm not playing.
And go play anywhere else where they could feel those feelings that they lack there.
I'm not getting out on the field.
Exactly. So that was a huge stance they took.
It was. And the coach supported that.
Exactly. That's what made it sweet too.
Yeah. You know, and I think I just think those are the examples that crosses the racial line. It's about the team coming together, one voice, standing up for what's right. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful. I commend the coach. I commend the team, those players. It was a risk, but they hit them where they needed to hit them at.
Because what? If they would have sat out one game, I read that.
What'd they say?
Mizzou would have owed BYU $1 million.
Wow.
One game.
Just one game.
One game. I mean, drop a million. And that kind of speak to also how you get people's attention.
Oh, absolutely. Hit them in the back pocket. Oh, that's, man, let me tell you. How you get corporations to change? Oh, yeah, you start picking it out there and folks can't come buy their stuff and you start making all those calls. Look at Donald Trump. Mm. Okay, he got dropped by several. Oh, no, you hitting the shareholders are saying, guess what? No, he got to go. Okay, you're hitting them in the back pocket. And I just would have liked to have been a fly on the wall in that conversation with that university president, because I can hear them say, look, now, you know, yeah, right. I mean, there's no reason to have a long conversation.
It took 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
They went in there at 10 o'clock. It was done by 10:30.
Here's your box. You know, we appreciate you, but $1 million? For one game. They look like they're committed to, you know, it could be two. And, not even to talk about the endorsements and the advertising and the vending and, you know, all. Man, listen, they just had to pay the university $1 million. What about the ticket sales and all these kind of things? Oh, no. We will see you later.
Yeah. We'll fix it. You know. it's about 20 minutes.
Peace. You know what I mean? Office empty. Gone. But let's talk, you know, a little bit about this young brother, right, that was going on this particular hunger strike, this Jonathan Butler, 25 years old. Now, his hunger strike did not, so we're talking about the moral thing to do versus the economic thing to do. His hunger strike didn't get the president out. It was the football team. Mm-hmm. So what does that say about even when you know it's the right thing to do, that the right thing itself is not enough? It takes economic loss to get the job done.
True enough. Okay? Because, I mean, and that's such a sad thing to say, right? That morally, we can't do the right thing when there's some economic factor involved. And you can take that any way you want to. But why is it that we have to go to that extreme? You know, this man was going through a really extreme thing, you know, to put his body through that.
Yeah.
And still not have the same effect that saying I'm not playing this game Saturday had on the president.
Well, we just found out that Jonathan Butler is going on a hunger strike. Oh, really? Well, how long has he been going on a hunger strike for? Oh, it's been a few days. Oh, wow. They're serious. Well, keep us posted. Okay. And then the next conversation is, the football team, they're refusing to play. What? Refusing to play?
It's going
to
cost us money.
Oh, what? Oh, no. Get the president. Get him. Yeah. Okay. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah,
bring the quarterback in here right now. I need to talk to him.
Right. Let's get the coach in here right now. We need to find. They're not going to play. They're just not going to play. Okay. Get the president in here. Okay.
But you know what I also think about now? Maybe the hunger strike wasn't going to be as big of a scene as them not showing up for that football game.
That's, well, exactly.
Because they could have kept that quiet. You know, this kid's not eating. Okay. Yeah. Keep us posted.
Well,
but if they don't show up to play that football game, then the whole world's going to know there's a problem.
Well, ESPN, they said, brother, I don't know if you know this, that more people watch a football game than go to church. Mm. Okay.
I believe it.
So,
and football's on Sunday, so people probably skip church to watch football.
So the reality is there's power in football and basketball. And we've seen this activism of athletes coming out, LeBron James with Trayvon Martin, and I think there was other athletes with the T-shirts, I Can't Breathe, I believe with Brother Gardner. So you see athletes coming out using their power. And I honestly think they're sitting there going, I think the hunger strike motivated them. They saw that commitment. And we're going to talk a minute about his commitment, Brother Butler. But, you know, when you think about, I think these athletes sit back and go, the university's making millions of dollars off of me.
I think now they are.
You know. And guess what? Yeah, I ain't got a scholarship, but my career could be over in one play. Okay? So who really has the power here? And I'm going to say this. It's not the administration of the university that's got the power. It's those players on the field. And what we saw exhibited by this football team is bring it on. If they want to fix, they have opened up a new door to activism on the college campus.
Yes, they have.
If you want to continue to do this stuff, I say to these football programs, these basketball programs, you know what? Pack it in. If you got stuff happening on your campus that's not right, pack it in, and you'll see folks moving. Because I'm here to tell you, they're going to do some, they're going to implement some things.
No, I don't think this will be the last time we see this happen.
Oh, no.
I mean, now that they've opened up this floodgate and these kids now see the power that they do have, it's going to be tremendous for those other campuses who are feeling that same type of.
What about the L.A. Clippers?
Right.
They were like, we're not going to play. Sterling.
Donald Sterling.
Peace. See you later. Okay. The commissioner and the league owners, they were like, no, we're not going to lose all that revenue. We're not going to lose all that money because of you. You got to go. Even though he made out like a bandit in the end, which was kind of crazy. I don't know how you go off and on a racist, rant and you walk away with more money than you bought the team for. Okay. Amazing. Amazing. I don't, only in America. but this Jonathan Butler, man. I mean, this, I hope I'm getting his name right. Is that correct? Let me just look
Jonathan
one more time.
Butler.
Jonathan Butler. This guy, man, what type of commitment is that, though? To say, I'm going to go on a hunger strike until the president resigns.
Man, this cat is, and like you said, we had talked about this off mic, that he was willing to, he pretty much had made reservations to die.
Yes.
I mean, not reservations, but made, arrangements to get himself ready to pass on, because that's how committed he was to this cause.
I like the reservation with death, though.
Yeah. But yeah, man, like, and how many of us are in that same mental space now that we sacrifice something as great as our lives for something that we really believe in? We've lost that, and it's really commendable to see this young man step up in that way.
Man, you have said it. We have lost this sacrificial commitment to things that matter in our society. I mean, here is a kid. I don't know if you had a chance to see him talk on CNN, Anderson Cooper, last night, but, I mean, he said he was ready. You know, he said he was going to do whatever it took, man, and people thought he was going to die. I mean, his friends, man, his family, they thought he was going to die. But he believed so much in changing the culture at that university, in a university he said he holds dear to his heart. You know, he's undergrad. He graduated. He was in graduate school. And he talked about how he was, even doing his undergraduate, how he was marginalized and called names and just treated like less than human.
Man,
even
can you
then,
talk just for a second, and I'm going to make a comment just about being marginalized. Mm. What does that mean?
That means you don't matter. You're pushed to the side. That means you're out there on a periphery somewhere, and although you may be just like me, you don't matter. I'm looking at you from a distance. You're marginalized. Your opinion, your input, your talents.
Minimum.
It don't matter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. Matter of fact, I don't even want to hear it. Why are you speaking? Okay, that's being marginalized, and also, being seen, and it's not just being marginal, but being seen as less. Mm. Okay, you're not. You're not like us. You don't have the intelligence that we have. You don't have what it takes. We're different. We're better. Right. I mean, that's what being marginalized is like. And so
I'm going to stop you. Yeah. All right. And so now, man, I talk to kids all the time, and one of the growing questions and the ongoing questions all the time is, what motivates you, man? Mm-hmm. What is your passion? What do you love? And when I talk to most kids, black kids anyway, they subject themselves to sports. Mm. And so we get into the question of, what drives you? What do you want to be? What do you love? Football, basketball.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And
ballet.
That's it. Like, that's the only answer they have.
Yeah.
And they're in their mind, man. That's been the only thing that they've seen people that look like them be successful in.
Absolutely.
And so having an identity that correlates with sports, football, basketball, whatever the case may be. That's where I see myself, because that's what we do. That's who we are, And I tell these kids all the time, like, man, you're more than that. Mm. You're more than a football player. You have to actually, and like you said, that can be done in one play. You can be a football player today and be
crippled
on the street tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so finding exactly what it is, that inner genius, that inner talent that you do have outside of the sport, is more important to give somebody that value that that it really takes to feel fulfilled.
That's deep, and I want to drag that into the second half of our show, really talking about these sort of images of people that we identify with, and how that's impacting our young people. I think you're absolutely correct.
And it's like, what else? Okay, what else do you like?
I don't know anything, you know.
It's like, man, you know, you could be whatever you want, man. Like, do you know that this world is really yours? Like, we just here trying to help you navigate it.
Absolutely.
It's yours, man. You're going to be the next one up here.
Absolutely. Wow.
And helping kids find that is important.
Parents teach your kids, man.
There is more to life than sports. There is more to life than subjecting yourself to being an athlete of any sort.
More.
The world is big. The world is complex. The world is... It needs different talents.
More.
We can't be all football players.
That's right.
No, I don't want to be at 7-Eleven and I get tackled. You know what I'm saying? Like man, I'm a football player. Like, man, you're 40, man.
You know?
golly.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about it, too. I mean, those careers have a time limit on it. I mean, it's a young man's game. And after that, you know, but we're going to get into that in the second half of our show. Man, this has been like exciting. And so we will be right back. Hang in there. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Be sure to like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. Follow all of our content on the OneMicOneVoice.com website, or be sure to email me at dt@OneMicOneVoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at OneMicOneVoice.com. Keep listening.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show, building the collective conscious. We're back. You know, just picking up where we left off, DT, you opened up a can of worms that we could actually dedicate a whole show to. But these young people identifying only with what they see in the mainstream media, right? I mean, and it goes back. I mean, on break, Richard kind of brought this up. Well, it goes back to what I was talking about in Wales and how they were saying, well, black people, you know, you guys have a hard time convincing us that racism exists because you have, you know, Halle Berry and Denzel Washington, and you have these black football players and hip hop artists. And so, man, I mean, the pool of who our young kids identify with is so small. Because of pop culture, right?
And oh man, I'm 6'2"
Yeah, tall brother.
Pretty nice size guy.
Yeah.
When I'm out places, man, just naturally, people will ask me, "You play sports?
You play basketball?"
Like, man, I mean, I did play football. I was an athlete, but I'm more than that too.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
That's not what I'm all about.
Yeah, and.
Even that's an experience that most, you know, black kids have just by being tall. I mean, they'll ask you, "You play basketball? You play football?" That's just like a natural inclination people have about you just because of your size.
Icebreaker. Yeah. You know, and it speaks to identity too, right? Like you just said, I'm more than that. That doesn't, although I play a sport, the sport doesn't define me. You know, I'm Deshaun Thornton. That's who I am. You know, with my own mind, my own way of looking at life. You know, I'm a person. You know, I'm a brother. I'm a son. You know, I'm whatever. I mean, you know, you're not just defined by the pig skin.
Right.
You know,
I'll say this, you know, in sports defense, I learned a lot of good things out there on the football field, being a part of teams, learning how to go through something and persevere. Those qualities are good in teaching kids, you know, those things. But when it's like, that's it, that's all I am, is a football player, basketball player, soccer player, whatever, then it's a problem.
And again, I'm an advocate of sports philosophy and what it does to the individual as well as the collective group. So I'm on that same page with you. What I will say, I'll go a little bit further and to say this. Our society glamorizes, and what those young people are not telling you is that to them, that is success. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is popularity. Mm-hmm. I want to be popular. I want to be known. Also, I want to make a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
You see, so all of those, you know, it's not about the philosophy of sports. What we're talking about is those things that the coach brings you and the team environment brings you and grows you and challenges you. And I mean, that's the philosophy of sports, right? It's not about that. What they're looking at is the celebrity in sports. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the problem. And we don't redirect that. We don't say, well, hold on for a minute. Okay. Why? Why do you want to be a football player? Why? And, well, you know, I want to go to NFL. Well, why do you want to go to NFL? Well, it's going to come down to those things. You know, they might not even be able to articulate those things, but that's what they see, and that's what they have made success for them. That's the problem. We're not teaching. We're not redefining what success is in our society. Okay, and success. Okay, it could be a myriad things, right, for
True.
People. Okay,
True.
But how many of us are going to make it to professional sports?
The statistics are minimal. They say 1%.
Okay.
So of people, you know.
So if that's your success, you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just you're not going to get
your
there.
Your margin of error is small.
You're not going to get there. So we have to redefine what success is to people and to our young people. Success, I mean, we can talk a little bit about definition of success. I mean, success is being a good citizen. Mm-hmm. I mean, treating people like you want to be treated. Success is working hard at something, no matter what it is, and achieving it. Doesn't matter. Whether you make six figures or you make, four figures. Five figures. Success to me is contentment. Okay. Mm-hmm. With knowing your talents and ability and DT maximizing them. That's success.
That's true.
Okay. And the outcome, the byproduct of that might be money. Hey, you know, whatever. But you can't equate money with success. Otherwise, you wouldn't have volunteerism.
Or we wouldn't see these successful characters in our celebrity world commit suicide.
Oh, absolutely. You
I mean, if just having all the money was the end all,
I'm loaded.
Then, guess what?
I got a 60,000 square foot home. I got a butler that wait on me, and I don't even know his name.
I just call him butler.
Hey, butler.
And then to think, man, that butler thinking to himself, like, I got a name, man.
Exactly.
I'm somebody too still. Exactly. I mean, this is what I have to do to get by, but right. I'm alive, man. I have interest.
Right.
You talked about the marginalization, man, that just all tie into it, because there are lots of people who are fitting into a criteria of a title or something, but they're more than that, man.
Yeah.
There are lots of people, and I think that as the world continues to grow and change, I think more people will get on board with the fact that we are all multi-talented and we are not all just this one trick pony.
Well, and you know, we push to make money. I mean, success and money are considered synonymous. You know, if you see somebody that driving a broke down car, you know, society would say, man, they struggling. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Now, they may be struggling, but that's materialism. Okay, that has nothing to do with the content of a person's character or their heart or how they view the world or what they give. You know, it's not about you can't, at the end of the day, you cannot measure whether or not a person is successful by the money they make, the position they have, or the material wealth they have obtained.
This is true.
It is a, I would say it's skewed, to say the least. I think some of the most successful people are givers. Mm-hmm. Okay,
I believe that too.
You wouldn't even. They're humble, and they're givers, and the impact that they're making on lives throughout the world are just tremendous, and we don't even know their names.
And those are our unsung heroes.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
The engines that keep the world running are those that give.
I mean, think about all of the ideas and thoughts and effort that go into putting on a football game.
Oh, that's a lot.
And we just see the game, right? Yeah. We just see the two teams going back and forth.
It's a lot.
But it's a lot of stuff that goes into that, man. And people don't even think about, you know, those people behind the scenes that make that happen.
Behind the scenes, cooking the hot dog.
Who made the jerseys? Who designed the helmet? Who created the pads? I mean,
brought the beer.
Who brought the beer?
You know what I mean?
Right?
Game without beer. Who want to watch that? No, I'm just teasing.
But yeah, seriously though, you know who? I mean, who stops to think about the backdrop story?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, the people. That's why I was so upset with baseball, man, back in the 90s when they went on strike, you know, and all those people at the ballpark, you know, lost their jobs and couldn't provide for their families. I just thought it was so selfish, right? And we might be deviating, but this all comes back to the fact that, folks, college is a place where you are supposed to be developed for your active role in society. Now, I hear some people out saying, everybody's not going to go to college. Well, okay. I'm talking about college. So if you want to have a conversation about folks that are not going to college, send us an email and we can do that. We're talking about folks that are going to college right now, and they are supposed to be, equipped to deal with not just the learning environment, but being educated, but coming out and being able to facilitate that in a way that makes our world better. Mm-hmm. Why would you be educated to keep the world moving like it's moving when it's jacked up? What have you learned? Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes no sense to me. I mean, for you to look in the book, and the book's going to tell you the challenges of Indian people, Native American people. You look in the book is going to tell you the challenges of Italians and the Irish and slavery on black folks and all of these atrocities that have taken place. And you leave how you open the book. You leave the same way.
No.
To me, that's not critical thinking. And that's not being challenged. And so if you leave the institution the same way you come in. Now, I will say that is an intellectual failure, is what I will say.
Man, to me, we shouldn't even go to sleep the same way.
Absolutely.
You know, like, we should be that dedicated to growing every day.
Absolutely.
You know, in whatever capacity, however small it may be, just to go to bed a little bit wiser, a little bit less angry, a little bit more engaged with life and your children, your families, these little things we can do just to bring a little bit more joy to our life every day. And you're talking about spending 4 years on a college campus.
4 years.
Or more, you know, and still coming back out.
Same way.
Or worse.
I hate you.
Or worse sometime.
I don't like you. When I came in, I don't like you now.
But also talk about, you know, like when we go back to our communities and we have been educated, whatever that means, you know.
Yeah.
And the people that we were interacting with, we interact with them differently because we've been changed somehow.
Yeah.
And they notice it because they've pretty much stayed the same.
Yeah.
And there's a problem with that.
Oh, yeah. You sell out, bro.
Yeah.
You speaking all proper,
talking,
man. Come
out
on.
Upper than that.
Exactly.
But, man, we just...
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't have the answer to that, you know, but what I'm saying is, and what Mike is saying is, we can't go into our everyday situation, into our college universities, and come out the same.
No, no. And I think Missouri is a example right now that we need to look at. And number one, understand that these problems exist on college campuses. Admonish the team, Jonathan Butler and others that stood up. I mean, they had a couple of rallies, and I want to touch on something just in a little bit, DT, but they had a couple of rallies that were titled Racism Lives Here on campus. Matter of fact, October 1st they had one, and then October.
Is this to bring awareness that, you know, they've identified a problem and let's deal with it, or we're racist?
No, this is September 12th, October 1st. They had two rallies. They were titled Racism Lives Here. This was by this one group on campus, this black student group on campus, that wanted to bring attention to the issues that were, they were demanding the registration take a more active stance on campus racism. And it says October 5th, an intoxicated man yelled racial slurs at members of the Legion of Black Collegians who were rehearsing for a play. On December 10th at the homecoming parade, students stood locked arms in front of President Wolf's car during the parade, and the police had to remove them from there. This was an outcry for engagement. You know what? And I was telling my friend, I said, look here, I am happy that young people are getting engaged in the conversation. What we failed to realize, Dr. King was criticized for getting young people involved in the conversation. Mm. So, folks, those of you who are listening to me, before you go and criticize young people, realize it was part of the civil rights movement. And the same criticism that you're launching against young people today was launched against them during the civil rights era. We don't see, we lack history. We don't understand this. There's no new argument being made today. And you know what? 50 years from now, people are going to look back and they're going to say, you know what? Oh, man, that Black Lives Matter movement was a good movement. Okay. They're going to look back and they're going to look on that. But in the moment, because of our fear, our misunderstanding, our lack of fortitude, DT, we demonize what we do not understand.
And that's an easy thing to do rather than deal with it, be scared of it, and push it under the rug.
Get educated about it. I told me, and I was talking to my friend. He was like, I said, man, do you think the Black Lives Matter movement is like 10 people? I'm like, dude, there's Black Lives Matter chapters in just about every state in this union. I mean, it's a huge movement. I mean, it's not centralized. You know, they don't have, as we said before, they don't have nobody sitting on the Black Lives Matter movement throne that are pulling the levers of this movement. But people are engaged on college campuses and in local communities. It is a movement across this country. And if it wasn't, folks wouldn't be talking about it. Okay.
Why would it matter if it didn't matter?
It wouldn't even matter. And I said to him the same thing I said, get educated. Oh, don't take it from me. Read. Okay, as you remember what they said, if you want to keep it from a black man, just put it in a book. And that, you know.
That's sad that we both know. I mean, I don't know.
Man, isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? Just put it in a book.
Take a look. It's in a book.
Look at this brother, boy. Reading. I wish I had my guitar here. We're going to take
it
to another
level. But no, man, listen, read.
Yeah.
Not just your friends' Facebook updates.
Yeah.
Not just the status updates.
Learn how to write too while you're
right too, man.
Trip on
and
that.
We're losing that writing because you know everybody talking this shorthand.
I can't even understand some
I
of
hate
it, man.
When people text me like that.
I'm like, what does that mean? Christ, you know, I'm like, really? I'm like, what does that mean? You know, really, I'm trying to, sometimes I had to Google it. Because I'm like, man, what does that mean? But I want to segue in our last few minutes here. You know, I was there was this article, and this is a deeper conversation that is related, I believe, to in a indirect way. So I don't want anybody saying that I'm saying it happened on this college campus, but it is related in an indirect way to this talk. And you hear this with going back to even Charles Manson wanting to create a race war in America. And, you know, when I think about it, and we've talked about this, DT, what does that look like? I mean, people have friends that are in different racial and ethnic groups. So do you just like disfriend? I mean, is it just like on Facebook, you unfriend somebody and then you go to war with them? Yeah. I don't even know how a race war is even possible in America.
Like at this point, it does not make any sense, you know, considering everything you just said. How do I distinguish my real friends from the ones I want to go to war against, you know, or from the people that I'm going to be cool with, even though, you know, it's this race war going on? It's going to get real confusing, you know. And I mean, I'm sure people are looking at the media, they're looking at the news, they're looking at all these things that are portraying blacks to be very angry and very, and we are, to be very belligerent and just acting out. But it's not to the point where we feel, and I can't speak for everybody, but that we just want to grab up the arms and go to war with the world, because we're trying to fight wars in other places, and then we have people who are against that. So why start a war here on American soil?
Well, it goes back to Dylann Roof, right, in South Carolina. He said he wanted to start a race war. And then just recently here, the FBI arrested two Virginia man in Chesterfield, Virginia, attempting to buy weapons from undercover agents, which they had hoped to use to attack black churches, Jewish synagogues. This is what they were saying. This Ronald Beasley Cheney III and Robert Curtis Doyle are charged with conspiracy to possess firearms after having been convicted of a felony. They have a third man in charge, which is Charles D. Hardiman. And Hardiman is accused of plotting to rob a jewelry store and use the money to help Doyle buy land, stockpile of weapons for an impeding, folks, get this, race war.
That sounds like the zombie apocalypse to me, you know, like, and they're targeting the most
vulnerable
and peaceful entities in our communities. You know, and how do you?
Yeah, they said they want to blow up churches and set churches on fire. I mean, like, how is a church like an adversary to you? I mean,
exactly.
They're like going inside the building. You know, it's not like they like assemble in a specific spot. You know, it's not like they're coming around your neighborhood or they're leaving the church with arms to go attack people. They're actually and they're singing songs. You know, they're praying. And so I don't understand the philosophy behind burning and shooting and killing people that are simply trying to assemble peacefully. I mean, that's
your target though for the race war.
I mean, go after a militia group or something. I mean, go after somebody that's doing something that you think
or is a threat.
Exactly. So how and I'm glad you said that. How is the church a threat?
I've never ever, and I've gone to church for years. I mean, I've never seen a pastor with a pistol.
You might see one nowadays,
maybe,
though.
Maybe so.
He probably
maybe
got one behind the pulpit.
But he never stopped. Don't church
move too
on
quick.
Sunday
don't get
to
the spirit too
the
quick.
Like,
hey, yeah. hey, next time you go.
Nobody move.
don't get the spirit too quick. You might get shot.
Right. Right?
You might want to be careful next time you go to the altar. Don't flinch. Because you might pow. You might get taken out. They say this Hardiman has 17 felony convictions.
Oh, good guy, huh?
17.
Wow.
One wasn't good enough. 5 wasn't good enough. 10 wasn't good. 15 wasn't good enough. He has 17
felonies.
Not 17 misdemeanors.
Nah.
He's got 17
OG
felonies.
In the criminal gang.
Wow.
Professional. Career criminal. That's what they call those people.
Yeah, he is definitely a career criminal. And they say this, you know, they classify them as white supremacists. They talk about them being paranoid. that there's a race war going on, that blacks or the minorities are out to eradicate the whites. So that's their philosophy, that somehow, you know, I'm a black person. I admit it. I don't think I've ever thought about eradicating anybody. You know, I mean, how would I mean, that is, I mean, do people really, it's hard for me to even, you know, even to begin to think about whether or not they truly believe this. You know, I can't even get to the point where I can formulate the thought of them believing it, because are black people on the football field thinking about eradicating white people? Like, where are these black people at that's going to eradicate white people?
Think about what happened
where
with,
are they?
With the police officer getting shot at the gas station, and then that automatically being connected in some way to the Black Lives Matter movement. And in some way, that being connected to black folks wanting to eliminate police officers.
It's like a slippery slope, right?
Yeah, because there's a misunderstanding somewhere.
For every crazy black person, okay, because there's many, I have crazy people in my family, by the way. So I know crazy black people, right?
Same here.
So for every crazy black person, I can point 100 that are doing great things. So you take that one and you infer that to all black people, okay? That's ridiculous. I understand the argument, brother. I get it. And I know it's not your argument. But, I mean, for these people sitting around, I guess, drinking beer, putting on their KKK outfits, getting ready for a race. Yeah, I'm meshing it all together now. Getting ready for a race war against black people. I don't know who the black people are. That's my question. Who are the black people?
Right. You haven't even identified.
Who are the black people? It's not me. You know, it's not you. It's not rich. Where are these black people that want to eradicate white people? Where are they? Okay. I don't know. Maybe they're Herman Cain.
Say it again.
Maybe Herman Cain wants to eradicate. You know, when they kicked him out last year out of the Republican Party,
I'm not going to be naive and say that they aren't out there, you know?
Well, I think. There are
it's not in the multitude that people
absolutely
think, and that there's a race war that's present erupt.
And I would also say that I am no in no wise saying that there's not prejudiced black people. Okay, I've met them. Okay, they exist, but I've yet to meet black people. Just personally, I mean, this is not scientific. I'm just saying, in my life, I've yet to meet black people that have an agenda of eradicating white people. If I live a few more years, maybe, you know, maybe I meet one, you know, in the cigar bar or something that says, "Hey, man, you know, I want to kill white people." Well, you know, I'm gonna turn you in.
But man,
I'm
like
sorry.
You're saying,
I'm
though, even
call
as
911, this dude's crazy.
As black people, we don't even have those people in our lives, man. And I'm a, like you said,
yeah,
I've grown up black my whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
And hadn't met one that I know of personally that had that agenda on their mind.
Yeah. Race or war, I don't believe. But I will say, though, and as we move to conclude the show, I will say that all of the getting back to Missouri, you know, the things that have happened there, even in Ferguson and Baltimore, other locations, folks, I do believe that we're definitely going to see more race riots in this country. But I would distinguish between a race riot and a race war. Okay, I just don't think America. I've been proven wrong before, and but I just don't think DT. We are a country that is on a boiling point of a race war.
I don't believe it either.
See?
And you know why I don't? Because, I don't know, you know, but I look at TV, man, and I see how we've been included, you know, in these little roles and the way that, you know, they portray our families just having a good time with each other. And I mean, why? Why would that be the message on TV if we're that divided right now in our country?
Yeah.
You know, why would that be something I could see on TV if we're that separated where we're going to find ourselves fighting to the death in a few weeks, a few months, a few years, you know?
I just got too many. My family, man, is a rainbow. And, you know, I have too many beautiful white brothers and sisters that I'm friends with, man. I just don't see them, you know, killing me. You know what I mean? I just, you know, it's like one of those things where we go back, we have history. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so I just can't buy into that. But these crazy people out there, and they do heinous acts in the name of trying to produce something like that. One thing I do want to toss in there is that we talked about a few weeks back about the book, getting the word out to you, the book Black Man's Perspective on Racial Profiling. We want you coming up soon. We're going to have this on our Facebook page as well as our website. And we want you to contribute. We want to expand the conversation. This is not a topic that folks have. A lot of folks in our nation don't even think exists. And so I think that that's a narrative that needs to be told. And so One Mic, One Voice will be bringing that to you really soon. DT?
Man, I just want to say again, thank you to Richard, Black and Studios.
Black and Studios.
Holding us down.
Down.
You know what, man?
The meter didn't get high today, though.
It didn't. You know, I felt love in here today.
Yeah,
all day I felt love. Yeah.
So when the meter get high, love go out, man?
No, not necessarily, but I can tell that, because there's some love mixed in that compassion you have.
No doubt.
Some of that. Yeah. That aggression, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, another black angry man.
So,
right.
I mean, it's all
always
good.
Angry.
But it's all good. But yeah, I mean, I'm overjoyed.
Nah, man. Hey, and also, as always, you know, just a shout out to folks that are listening across the globe. And we just appreciate you tuning in and share us, you know, like us. And keep sharing One Mic, One Voice.
Communicate with us.
Yes. We want to hear from you. We love those emails that come in, those favorable ones, the ones that are critical. We want those, too. We want to hear from you because at One Mic, One Voice, it's not just our voice, but it's your voice. And we're going to do another live show. We had so much success with the live show. We got to talk about how we can get that thing going once again to get you to call in and to get you to share your insight. But as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, Scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.